For those of you just tuning in, you might be wondering what Friday Night Light is all about. And for those of you who have been here before, you might be wondering still what the hell is going on over here. So let me break it down. So Friday Night Light, L-I-T-E, is loosely based off of a phrase that I feel like I coined, but I feel like my kids would say, no, that definitely was not you. Totally was, but whatever. So about 5 years ago, here in Kansas City, they used to hold these free country concerts down in Power and Light. So every Thursday, I knew I was getting cute. I knew I was going to hang out with my homies, and I knew that I was going to get lost in the music and hopefully meet some new people. So on a Monday, I knew by Thursday, I was going out and having a good time. So Thursday ultimately became my Friday, but really Friday light, because I still had to work the next day. So that's the whole concept of Friday Night Light, L-I-T-E, because this comes out on a Thursday. However, another step is that every time I would be out on a Thursday having a good time, I would get on Facebook and see people you may know. You know how those faces pop up and you're like, who the hell is this person? Well, I used to make total fun of it and be like, no, we're never going to know each other. But something clicked in me when I would see somebody's face or their name or this amazing piece of art as a profile picture and be like, hell yeah, I'm going to send a friend request to this person. And it didn't just have to be a cute bearded guy, although I really do appreciate them. It was somebody that maybe I saw on somebody else's post that I recognized, or somebody that just had a cool name, somebody had a piece of artwork as their profile picture, something that intrigued me in that moment. Of beverages or not, I felt that it was meant to be, and so I send a friend request. So fast forward, a handful of the people that I have interviewed / shot the shit with on my podcast are people that I have great respect for. Everybody that I have added on my Facebook, I have great respect for, even if we don't agree. Everybody that I've added and has graciously accepted me has enlightened me, has educated me, has supported me, has made me cry, has made me laugh, has made me mad, but in the best fucking way. My newsfeed, my timeline does not look like my immediate friend group. Although my immediate friend group doesn't really look like my immediate friend group anymore, because I really want to be expanded in that way. And I feel that it starts right there with social media. And so many times social media gets a bad rap. And for me, it just hasn't been that. Social media has been a transformation of connection in the most amazing way. And wanting to do this podcast was just kind of another leap into that. I feel that everybody that I have interviewed and shot the shit with so far has something amazing to give to this world. And it's not fair that they should just share themselves in their own feed. They should be shared on everyone's feed. And so my concept for this podcast is that people that I don't know, but want to get to know, but don't actually know, I want to share their light with everyone. And so far, I feel very accomplished in that, because everybody in this world has something to give, everybody in this world has something to teach, and we all have something to learn. So anytime that you're out on a Thursday, a Friday light, and you're thinking, I wonder if I should add that person, do it. Because their world is completely different than yours, or maybe it's the exact same, and then you can sit and talk about, holy shit, I'm not the only one going through this. Yeah, that's connection at its best. And social media gets such a bad rap, and this podcast is just a reminder that it doesn't have to be that. So I appreciate everybody who has been on my podcast so far that has shown their differences and their struggles and their accountability. You inspire me, and I hope by sharing your words and your light that you inspire so many more people. So enjoy every episode of Friday Night Light, L-I-T-E, on a Thursday or whenever you can get to it. Thank you.
Hello.
How are you?
I am actually feeling fantastic.
Well, that is awesome to hear. I think of how that really works. But what I've seen from movies, I thought you'd be feeling awful and run down, but
my crash day is Sunday.
Aha. So there's like a routine.
Either afternoon or evening, I start having some issues. They pump me. The first thing I do on Wednesday night, because my treatments are on Thursday, is I take two dexamethasone, you know, what they gave the president that had him coming out acting like he was like 20 years younger.
Right.
I take that, take two of those the night before. And then the morning before my treatment, as soon as I get the okay that I'm going to have treatment, because they draw blood right away. And then when I get my blood results back, I get the okay. And so then they've already got my needle in my port. They take the blood through it. And then I get a big dose of dexamethasone and another anti-nausea and a big thing of steroids.
Wow.
And so I feel so good.
Mm-hmm.
For like 2 or 3 days, the day of and the day after my first treatment, I so overdid it.
Yeah.
Because I felt fantastic. And like with the steroids, you don't get body aches and you don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So, but I feel good. And then when I go tomorrow, I have to get a new Neulasta shot. And what that does is it boosts your white blood cell production.
Mm-hmm.
So it's where your immune system doesn't bottom out, but it causes pain in your long bones because it triggers your bone marrow to make more white blood cells.
Wow. I'm just in awe of all, I mean, just learning as you go, but just, you know, how resilient the body is, even with all of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. So we got right into it. So let's start first, who you are, what you do, and then we'll get right into that for sure.
I am Mary Blakely. I am the current reigning Miss Weston. That's been a somewhat joke title that's gotten more serious as time has gone on. that a friend who was an author gave me that title in the early 2000s. And I started putting it on business cards and introducing myself to people that way.
I love it.
But I like to think that I am an ambassador to Weston, Missouri. I love to introduce people to this town and show them things. And then I also work in the judicial system for the state of Missouri.
Awesome. So are you from Weston then, or where are you originally from?
Yes, I grew up here. So my parents have a farm. We grew up on a farm. This year, my dad at 82, mostly retired.
Right.
From farming. He let someone else take over the row crops this year. He does about 500 acres of row crops.
Wow.
Or used to. 400, 500. He is still doing his cattle.
Wow.
Yes. It's a smaller herd, but still, I mean, it's a lot. And, you know, so you've got to put up hay and you've got to do this and that. So I grew up on the farm with them, moved to Lawrence for a few years, met some really great friends there that I still am fortunate enough to stay in contact with. Thank God for things like social media, because you can stay in touch with people even during COVID times.
Heck yeah.
And so I lived down there a few years. And then in 95, I moved back to Weston and have been back here ever since.
Awesome. Well, and you know, your jive with your family, with your parents, is very much like mine. I mean, your parents are very,
yes,
you know, loving, wonderful people, and everything that you post about them makes me feel more connected to you in that way too. And it sounds like he and my dad would have a lot in common, because my dad won't sit the hell down either. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, plus both of them have great stories.
Yes, true.
And so, like, they could just sit and probably talk for days.
Yes.
And someday, post-COVID, we need to maybe make that happen.
Absolutely.
Especially now that my dad has some more time.
Mm-hmm. And your sister. So I always go through, and Facebook shows you how long we've been friends on Facebook. So we have been, quote, friends since 2014, which is wild to me.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's just wild to me. I've met you twice. Once I met you at your sister's. She had a little backyard party. And then
Yes.
the second time, I believe, is just when I ran into you at the Pirtle Winery. Like, I was in the bathroom and crossed paths with you then.
Well, and I'm glad that you mentioned Pirtle because I love Pirtle so much. That is my part-time job, even though I work for the state. Surprisingly, judicial work doesn't pay that well. And I'd had some old debts and things that I was working on paying off, you know, because hey, I'm an adult. And so I, up until COVID this year, I had been working some weekends, most weekends at Pirtle.
Yes.
Doing wine tastings and wine sales. And I love not just the owners who are fantastic and are, I consider them family, like I've adopted them as family. But they have a knack for hiring like the best employees. And it's such an amazing place to work. And I had quit working there because of COVID so that I wouldn't potentially take it home to my folks. Then I found out that I had cancer.
Wow,
And
yeah.
so, with all of the treatments and whatnot going on, obviously, I can't really be around a bunch of people right now being potentially exposed
Yes.
to
Yes.
wonderful.
Pirtle is amazing, and you were actually really great to me when I was looking for kind of a side quote side job, and then I actually got a DUI, and that didn't really sit well with the fact that I would be working at a
Right.
winery. But yeah, the owners are awesome, and everybody that works there has that same vibe that you do, just wonderful, loving, you know, this light wrapped around them. So yeah, I'm sure they're missing you. So are they open like full time still, or what's their
They are open full time 7 days a week,
Yeah.
taking COVID precautions. If anybody thinks that they might want to go and check them out, they are taking precautions. They are doing a lot of cleaning. They are sanitizing. They are wearing masks, adhering to the health department guidelines, of course.
Yeah.
But they are just such hard workers.
Yes, it's a wonderful, and you talk about Weston too, and I that's how I relate to you also, because at the time that I met you, it was, you know, with a group of army fellows that were always going there too, some that lived there, but it really is this wonderful little gem of a town, and so I really
Oh
do
yes.
feel like it belongs to you.
Well, and one other thing, as I'm ambassadoring, if that's a word, I just read a thing today. This year, this calendar year so far, six new businesses have opened in
Oh my
Weston.
gosh, that's amazing.
And we are making it work. I mean, places are working so hard. One of my favorite shops I had mentioned I wanted to come pick up a piece of art for my yard at Backroads Art. And Denise, I had asked her specifically, "Hey, do you still have some of these turtles made out of the metal and the stone?" And she's like, "Yes." And I said, "Well, because I already have a stony owl and my little pig that are from the same artist." And I said, "I think I need a rocky squirrel." And she was like, "Because of your immune system, tell me when you want to come. And you could come either before or after store hours to pick out the one you want and get it. Just let me know and I will work with you
That's awesome.
to avoid people."
Yes, that's awesome. And that just covers me in goosebumps, because literally that to me is like the foundation of America right there. Like knowing who they
Yes.
care about and making sure that it's not just about the sale. That's awesome. And what's the name of
Well,
that
and the
place?
thing is, Backroads Art,
Awesome.
they're on Main Street, and they have all these different artists that they buy things for, and it is so great. But I can tell you there's probably 10 other stores that would do the exact same
I'm
thing.
sure. Yeah, that's awesome. It's such a great little town. And for people that do listen to this podcast that don't live here, that don't understand it, it's got so much history
Yes.
and charm, and the people are awesome. And there's not one place that you don't go into that you don't fall in love with. So, yeah.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful
And
drive
it's
there,
they
too.
have it like unique shops,
Yes.
which is what's awesome. And I've been kind of trying to remind people that instead of buying from Amazon or from a big box store or corporation for Christmas or your holidays this year, maybe consider small town shops, locally owned small businesses, because A, your tax money stays local, which is important if you want things like your roads fixed or things like that.
Yeah.
But also help these small businesses that have been suffering and have had shutdowns during this year, and, you know, help them out a little bit. And so many of them are like, you can look online. They're putting some of their merchandise online and they're like, you can pay and we will online and we will ship it to you. Anything to make people feel safer and still be able to conduct business as best they can.
Yeah, that's great. And I guess it's normally at the beginning of October when they have the Apple Fest there, which brings a lot of people, and it's so awesome. Yeah.
Yes. First full weekend in October is Apple Fest every year. Mm-hmm. Second, generally, one time they had there was some weird conflict and they had to change it to the third weekend, is Irish Fest at O'Malley's Pub.
Right.
And Weston Brewing Company. Both of those had to be canceled this year, which is terrible for revenue for the town.
Yeah.
Not to mention for the businesses that are, you know, that's their big weekend.
Right. And, the amount of love and care that, you know, we know the owners of these places that goes into all of that. You know, I you can just feel it in their heart when they post that. It's just, it feels really broken right now. But I have faith that it will get back on track, because so many people do love the town, and so many people, that's where they go. I mean, especially the military, too. They flock to that place. They feel most at home there. So,
right.
Yeah. So, and you say you work at the courthouse too. So I'm curious, is that when you would always post like it's court day? So what exactly do you do there?
When about my first 14 or 15 months that I worked there, I worked in the traffic division. So this would be for Platt County. Mm-hmm. So I actually did the DWI and more serious misdemeanor traffic charges court docket. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot about traffic court, and I learned a lot about DWIs and driving while suspended and things like that. So it was a good education.
Absolutely.
And also got to develop some good working relationships with a lot of attorneys, which is nice, because like I've had people say, I got this speeding ticket or I got this DWI, who do I call? Mm-hmm. And when I can't make an official recommendation, sometimes I can provide a little insight. You know,
absolutely.
That was a wonderful job, gave me a lot of great court experience. And then there was an opening in our probate division, and I knew nothing about probate other than I'm like, isn't that for like dead people? And about half of what we do is decedent estates for people that have passed away. The other half is guardianships and conservatorships for minors and for adults. So say you have an aging parent who has cognitive function issues, mm-hmm. and gets to the point where they can't make their own decisions anymore, and you don't have a power of attorney. For that, what you can do is go to court and get legal guardianship of them to make medical decisions. That would be the guardianship is over the person, so medical decisions and where they would live and things like that. And you would get usually a conservatorship too, where you would handle their financials. And I knew nothing about any of that. And the same thing works for children. Like, sadly, we see sometimes cases where the parents are in situations where they cannot either physically or mentally or financially take care of the children and need someone else to have the legal right to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we go through the procedures through the courts to get them the legal right to do that.
That's awesome. And, you know, coming from a wretched divorce where court was like this scary, scary thing, and then ending up working there, I would always, you know, make sure they knew that the clerks, people like you, were friendly. And you had to ask the right questions, because a lot of times they can't answer, they're not allowed. But, you know, I learned so much about the court and healed so much from my stuff, just knowing how the court works and all that information that you're telling me. It's just wild to me how the little idiosyncrasies that happen throughout the day for all this big picture stuff, you know?
Right.
But, and it takes people like you with, you know, this great smile and energy to work in those places, I think, because so many times I feel like those jobs are, people aren't happy and they're not friendly, and it does make court scary. So I'm sure anybody that's come into contact with you has been very appreciative of your energy.
Thank you. Well, and I mean, like what I deal with in probate, well, I guess there's one other thing that we do, which is 96 hour emergency mental health holds, involuntary mental health commits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we don't do a lot of those, and we don't usually see the person who the petition's on. Mm-hmm. But the family member or friend or whoever is coming to petition for that is upset. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times the situation for guardianships, the people are upset. And people dealing with their loved one's estate who's passed away, they're upset. So you've got to really... I have one partner that I work with, my friend Tammy, and she is so awesome. You wouldn't believe this. She's nicer than me.
Oh,
she is like one of the nicest people on the planet. Like truly. And she and I work so well together because we have kind of the same point of view of these people need someone to be kind to them. Mm-hmm. They don't know what questions to ask.
Right.
They don't know what they're doing, you know, when they're just calling to get information, and they need somebody who's going to be patient and kind.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the ultimate.
I mean, we all.
Yeah. And it's any of those jobs, you know, specifically with mental health and all of that. I mean, I always put myself in their position and think, if that were me, how would I want to be treated? I mean, in any situation, but specifically right. That it's very scary. And, you know, there's guilt and shame and all that with families too. I dealt with it with the protection orders too. And
right.
It's very important to be able to, come at it with the kindness, just like you would be anywhere, if you have the choice. So, but you're not still working there right now, are you, or are you?
I am, as I feel up to
it.
Sometimes I have some issues after a chemo treatment where I'm having either digestive issues or just fatigue or the pain from the bone pain. And so my boss, my judge, is the nicest man ever probably to be a judge. He is very fair, and he is so concerned with me and with my health and with the potential of me getting exposed to COVID. So we have established very strict protocols for me.
Mm-hmm.
One good thing is we don't have jury trials right now. So down the back door out of my office is a secure hallway that has a jury room right around the corner that has private bathrooms. So I don't use the public bathrooms at work. And I'm not really, the judge isn't comfortable with me dealing with the public face to face for the most part. Mm-hmm. And our security staff has been so good too at like helping me out. If someone leaves something down at the security desk, one of them will usually bring it up to me where I don't have to go downstairs and be out in the public hallways. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm interested to know, because I feel like it all kind of runs together, that the tragedy of 2020, so much shit has taken place.
Yes.
And, you know, for anybody that has never met you, just and once I post the promo, but you are a very lively, outgoing, always doing something fun with music and friends and,
yes.
Absolutely, Miss Weston, for sure. So when all this transpired with COVID, what came first, COVID or your cancer?
COVID hit first.
Okay.
And then, like I had said, I made the conscious decision to take some additional precautions at work. I mean, we all were. And then I decided I should probably not work at Pirtle because they get such huge foot traffic on the weekends when I'm there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to take the risk of taking this home to my folks. Mm-hmm. My mom's had some health issues this year. And so I was like, yeah, this is not a good thing to take to them. So that all kind of happened. But at that point, I started really not doing social things anymore, which has been hard because I love live music. You know that. I know you love live music like I do. It's one of my all-time favorite things. One of the guys that works at Knuckleheads at the door is a Facebook friend of mine, and he makes it a point to send me a fun video every time that I'm having a treatment of some music that I would like that he thinks maybe I may not know about.
I love it.
So that he's exposing me to new things. And he's like, I can't wait for you to be able to come down here and I can buy you a drink or some tacos and you could see a band.
Yes, awesome.
But so I'd kind of, for the most part, quit going places. I went to the pub a couple times, to O'Malley's, to see some of our local performers, mm-hmm. Just as it was starting. And then I thought, I probably better lay off of this. So I started staying home for the most part. And then May 21st, I was sitting at home. And it was a Thursday. I'd come home from work. And what's the first thing women do when they get home from work? You take off your bra. You throw it across the room. You do the Mel Gibson from Braveheart. Freedom!
True.
So I'm sitting here. And I will tell you, I was being a typical American on a Thursday night. And I had my cell phone in my right hand playing Yahtzee, like you do. And I wanted to reach for the 62-ounce thing of M&Ms on the side table, like everyone has in their living room from Sam's right. Club, you know. And
wait, is this regular M&Ms? Sometimes or is this peanut? What kind? What flavor is it?
Regular. Okay. I'm a weirdo, and I don't like nuts. Okay. It's very strange. But I thought, well, I don't want my phone to time out where I have to put my code back in. So I kept my phone in my right hand and reached across with my left to reach the M&Ms. And when I did, I brushed up against my right breast. And I felt something. And I went, well, that doesn't feel right. So I opened the M&Ms and ate a couple handfuls. And then I put them back down. And then I went into the mirror and I did an exam. And it was very obvious that there was a mass. And then as I looked in the mirror real close, because who looks at their boobs very often
right,
in the mirror?
Right.
I mean, it's not like you really check them out every day. And I noticed there was some skin changes and I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good. So I didn't panic and I didn't tell anybody. And the next morning I called and scheduled a mammogram and an ultrasound. And they were able to get me in the following week, which that was a perk of COVID. Mm-hmm. They had just opened up to doing mammograms again. And so I was able to go the next week and I got the ultrasound and mammogram done. And when she went to put the sticker on, you know, they put the little nipple stickers on for your mammogram. She goes, oh, there's something there. And I said, yeah, that's why I'm here. And so I was like, yay, I'm validated, you know. And then they did the ultrasound and the ultrasound tech said, now the doctor has not been, once he reads this, he has not been coming in due to COVID. So probably he's going to tell me what your next steps are. And then I'll come in and report that to you. And I said, that's fine. That's great. She's a great ultrasound tech. I've had her before down at the medical imaging off like 94th and North mm-hmm. Oak. They are so good. I do all my imaging down there. It's so good. And like 3 minutes later, the radiologist came in and I went, oh, this isn't mm-hmm. good. So me being who I am, lied to everyone for weeks. Mm-hmm. I immediately told my coworker and my boss and the division two clerk and our court reporter, because we're kind of one little team that works together. I told them all and said, just so you know, this is kind of what's going on. I found a mass. Don't worry about it. I bet it's a cyst. I've had cysts before. I make a lot of lumps. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, great. It's no big deal. Mary's not worried about it. We're not worried about it. I was worried about
it.
I didn't tell anybody. So they set me up. I knew something else was up because my next appointment that I got was with a surgeon. Not for the biopsy yet.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, so I'm seeing all these little flags mm-hmm. come
well,
together.
They're trying to keep you and calm too by not saying, yeah.
By not saying yeah. much yet. Mm-hmm. So I go the following week after the testing, I went and saw my surgeon, Dr. Brian Wittick. He is fantastic. I love mm-hmm. him. It took him a little while to figure me out because, you know, and I'm sure he deals with people who are somber and sad and have all sorts of reactions. Mm-hmm. you know, when they're getting news about the big C. And he's like, she's cracking up and cutting up and making jokes. I'm like, that's how I deal with life. So he tells me there's, and I did not know this, for any time they find anything in your breast, any sort of mass, there's a 0 through 6 scale for your mammograms. Mm-hmm. 0 is, they couldn't get a clear read and you have to retest. 1 is a normal, healthy mammogram. No sign of a mass or anything. 2 is, hey, there's maybe a mass or a densening or a thickness here. All the way up to 6 is you've previously had breast cancer and they're finding new cancer. And so he explained all the levels to me and I go, okay. And he goes, and I'm like, so what am I, a solid 2, 3? And he goes, you're a 5.
Oh, wow.
There's a 95% chance it's breast cancer. Wow. And I went, oh, that was not what I wanted you to tell me. And he goes, right. Oh, so, and I said, great. So what do we do now? And he's like, we get this biopsy. We're going to get it set up as soon as possible. I go, great. So I went back to work that day and I tell Tammy, hey, so I got this. And I'm like, and I told her the thing. And she's also the same way. She's like, so what are you, like a 2? And I'm like, I'm a 5. And she like literally knees buckled and tears. And she's like, you said it was just going to be a cyst. And I said, I know, but I didn't want people to be worried about me. I said, and that's the first time that I cried later is telling Justin, my significant other, was telling him, he goes, well, how are you feeling about this? And I, that's the first time I cried about any of this. And I said, I just feel like I'm making people upset.
Aww.
And I don't want to be the person who
that
makes people
so
upset.
That is so you, and I don't even really know you.
Yeah.
But I know that's you.
I know, but that is. And so the next week, I went June 9th, and I got my biopsy done. It was the same radiologist that had read my stuff, Dr. Underwood, who is fantastic. He came in, and just like the first thing he did is just held my hand a little bit. And put me so at ease. And the two nurses that were the radiologist nurses that were working with me were so nice. And they had been chatting me up while I was waiting for him. And like just everybody there at North Kansas City Hospital put me so at ease. And we do the biopsies and it's like, yep, it's cancer. Yep, it's kind of bad. So Dr. Wittick was able to get this is again, thanks to COVID, they weren't doing elective surgeries. He was able to get my surgery scheduled for July 8th. And I mean, that's so fast. But in the 30 days between my biopsy and my surgery, my tumor grew a half a centimeter. It was the most aggressive type and it was growing very quickly. So, the other thing was Justin, I had told him, you keep working. He's living in Omaha right now. I said, you keep working until the weekend and then just come home for the weekend. Cause I said, I'm going to be in the hospital. My surgery was on a Wednesday. I said, at the earliest, I'll get out Thursday, maybe Friday. And then I can spend a night or two with my folks and my mom will feed me soup and fawn over me and take care of me, help me sponge bathe. She did that. and the day before my surgery, he tested positive for COVID.
Yeah, wow.
He continued to test positive for over 8 weeks.
God.
And so I have seen him once since my surgery and all of this began. Because then after that, he got strep throat. And so he had to stay home for 2 more weeks to make sure he wouldn't bring that to me. But so my surgeon was amazing. We had discussed all the options. You know, I could have done anything from a lumpectomy to doing radiation and chemo first to doing what we chose, which was a bilateral mastectomy. Because my cancer is hormone induced and you can have different hormone reactors. And I have it for estrogen, progesterone, and HER2. I'm a triple threat. So he's like, boy, you don't do anything halfway. And I said, I sure don't. I was like, if we're going to mess this shit up, we're going to mess it up. And so he's like, yep, we are. And so I had talked with him about being as aggressive as we can. I said, I don't want to be someone who takes minor precautions and then in 5 years or 10 years, it comes back and it's worse. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to die from this. I just want you to know that right now.
Awesome.
And he's like, great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then he started to talk to me about reconstruction and that they would, with the surgery, put in the spacers for to do the expanding. And I said, I've already thought about this and talked about it with Justin and with my family, and I'm not going to reconstruct. I 100% support any woman who wants to do the reconstruction. I understand why a lot of people want to do it, but going from double D's to nothing, I will tell you, is awesome. I'm going to start jump roping once I'm past this fatigue.
Oh gosh, that's so funny.
I was like, all the things I couldn't do, I'm going to play pool and not have my right? mood get in the way. I might take up archery.
Yes, please do. You'd be a badass at that. That and
well, you know, the Amazons used to cut off one breast, the Amazon women, so that they could shoot true so that their breast wouldn't be in the way.
And this is such wild fucking perspective, too, because, you know, and it's to me on this whole kick of, you know, it's our body, not society's, like, men, that's what they look for immediately. And the fact that you're so right. brave in saying, no, it's not an issue for me. And I understand people that want to get reconstructed too. I understand that it's kind of, it's this identity thing. And I totally understand it. But somebody who's always had, you know, bigger breasts, people don't understand. It's hard. It's really hard.
The back yeah. pain, the neck pain, the headaches mm-hmm. I would have, that I would go see my chiropractor and he would always say, you know, I can't just say this to other clients or else they'd be offended or call, you know, inappropriateness. But he's like, it's your boobs that are causing yeah. all these problems. But I'm also friends with my chiropractor and feel extremely comfortable with him. So I'm like, yeah, you can right. say anything. Usually during our session, it turns into an actual therapy session between the two of us. Yeah, I'm the same way with my massage therapist too. Both of them, I'm like, it's almost yeah. like therapy. Like I feel so much better mentally and physically leaving there. And I asked Justin, because you know, we're coming up on 12 years together, and I said, would this bother you? This is what I want to do, is not do reconstruction and just never have to buy a $65 mm-hmm. bra again. And just, I told my dad, I go, I can fit through that hole in the barn door down the hill and squeeze through instead of having to pull my breasts through. But I'm like, I'm really excited about not dealing mm-hmm. with that. And Justin goes, his quote was, that's not what I need you for.
Yeah.
And he's like, whatever you want to do. And we're here to keep you alive, and you just do whatever it's going to take to keep you alive. That's what I need you for. And so I'm really lucky to have that kind of support.
Well, and I have to be honest. I mean, what maybe people don't know what this podcast is about, new people, but this is getting to know people you may know but don't actually know. And I feel super connected to you. Like I get goosebumps. I mean, I love you dearly. You're just wonderful. But I had no idea that you had a significant other until all of this took place. And I was like, holy shit, I didn't know that.
He doesn't do social media, and he for the most part doesn't like for me to talk about him on social media. And so I, for the most part, I honor his wishes now with the COVID, and I cleared it through him to do his COVID updates because there are a lot of people around town. Honestly, Mike Coakley from the pub is one of the ones who, you know, that's how I met Justin, as he was working at mm-hmm. the pub when I met him, and we became friends. And then later, started dating a few years later. He'd been married when I first met him. And mm-hmm. so we were just friends and we used to talk a lot. And, then he ended up getting divorced and I was dating someone else that was a terrible relationship. You and I can talk about that at some point and commiserate. And then I kind of went through a little, I'm never dating again.
That's me currently.
Yes, and started talking to him Well, we'd been talking the whole time when I'd run into him, but I started talking to him and it just happened.
I love that. I mean, and again, you know, and I love Michael. He's awesome. I mean, that whole community, and that's something right now, even with COVID, you know, especially with COVID, that people are kind of struggling with this time that they're having with their significant other. And then on the flip side, you've had hardly any time, and that's got to be excruciating. I can't imagine, you know, the need, that's... you know, I'm sure you guys are pretty independent, but I'd be hating life. Is it affecting you guys, or are you guys doing okay?
Yes. And actually, over the past few years, he's had jobs where he's traveled a lot. And so we've had very limited time. So we've had to figure out how to make that work. We had been talking before my cancer about him maybe getting moved home by the end of summer. And then COVID and everything else kind of put everything behind. Now that he's healthy, now he's going to start looking for a job down here to where he can move home and be home for me more. But plus it's just time for us to be in this tiny little house where one of us may end up allegedly getting murdered. I mean, we don't know.
Oh, you have one of those houses? Caitlin and I do that on road trips. We're like, murder house, murder house.
Yeah, I have house. Like a 900 square foot four room house.
Nice. Well, but you like that kind of stuff. Don't you like all that kind of creepy murder?
It's not really murdery. I'm just saying, you know, the two of us haven't really spent so much time together that one of us could potentially, I don't know, get murdered.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, daddy's got a backhoe, you know, but it's just that my house is so small. We can't really get away from each other, but I've started a savings account to build a big shed because he's into things like old cars, rat rods. It's funny how much that until we actually started dating, we didn't know how much we had in common. Mm-hmm. We both love baseball.
Hell yeah.
I said, hey, there's this car show. And he thought I was bringing it up for him to go and enjoy. And I'm like, no, I'm going. And he goes, what? And I'm like, I've been going to car shows for 20 some years. I love car shows. And he's like, really? I love car shows. And I'm like, yeah, we're perfect. We both like a lot of the same music. There's some we don't agree on, but that's few and far between. When I brought up that I was a rude girl back in the 90s for the third wave of ska, and he's like, I had a ska band when I lived in Warrensburg.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, what? You know, I mean, just weird stuff. And we do a lot of rockabilly and stuff now, mainly is the shows that I make it out to. And a lot of it's because a lot of those guys I've known for decades.
Mm-hmm. And so let's go back about the baseball. So you are a huge Alex Gordon fan. And
yes.
You are to the point you might be slightly obsessed, but who wouldn't be? Look at the man. So
a little bit.
Where did that all stem from? Just, I mean, have you followed him since he came here?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends can tell you, I talked so much shit when he was playing third base. And I'm like, this kid is not going to make it there. This kid that everybody's talking about, like he's the Messiah, is not going to make it there. And then it's true. He wasn't ever going to make it at third base. And when he went to left field, I mean, one of the best left fielders to ever play the game.
Hell yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. 7-time gold glover, platinum glover, leads in outfield assists, you know?
Yeah. And it's so fun. Well, that year that they won the World Series, that team had such synergy. I mean, it was so fun to watch, just like the Chiefs now too. But I mean, they all had their, you know, their qualities that just shine. And yeah, I'm sad to see him go, he's so young, but they consider that old now, apparently.
That is old. And honestly, though, his kids are just to that age that he wants to be home with his kids. And I could never, even though I don't have kids of my own, never had kids, never got married, I could never take that away from someone that just wants to spend time with their family and be there for their kids growing up.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I do, I mean, it's like, what, so he plays maybe what, 1 year, 1 more year, 2 more years, maybe ends up getting hurt.
Yeah.
And I think that after he has some time to acclimate with his family, he will, I'm sure that they'll either welcome him back to the either the coaching staff or the scouting staff or the front office.
Yeah.
One of my other favorite Royals is Mitch Meyer. And Justin and I had gone to a game in 2011, I think, or 2012. And they had run, they were so struggling. I think it was probably 2011. They were struggling. And they had run through the bullpen so early in like game two of the year.
Oh, God.
And they brought Mitch Meyer, the center fielder, in to pitch, who had not pitched since he was in like junior high.
Oh, God.
And I was just, I mean, like he and I, because we'd loved him anyway. And I was like, to hear the stadium announcer announce, now pitching for the Kansas City Royals, the center fielder, Mitch Meyer. And he did okay because his fastball was like a 78 mile an hour fastball. Mm-hmm. And so nobody could hit that. I mean, it was like Bugs Bunny cartoon. And so it was so good. And we're just going nuts. And there had been some we were playing Cleveland, and there were some Cleveland fans that we'd stood up for because a couple drunk guys came over and got mouthy. And we told those guys to move along. So I was like, you're not going to have a problem with them. You're going to have a problem with us. And I'm ready to take you down. And so we made them move. And those people were like, thanks. And they felt bad that their team was beating us so bad. And I said, no, you're here with your family. You cheer your team. Yell real loud. Do you want me to yell with you? Because I will. I'm like, celebrate your team doing well.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And so when Justin and I are going nuts about Mitch Meyer, and my friend Lynn Greenemeyer was there too, and she's like, the people turn around, they go, is this guy like really good? And I'm like, no, sweetie, he's our outfielder. We just really suck right now. And they were like, it's great to see you so excited. And he pitched a couple more times that year. And like, he went to last year when Rusty Kuntz couldn't be our first base coach when he was having those vision problems. Mm-hmm. He took over as first base coach, and now he got a super huge promotion in the front office.
Very cool.
And he's super big guy. And I'm like, I just love how loyal the Royals are to their,
yes,
their situation.
And it's, my neighbor actually has on, well, he doesn't have it anymore, I don't think, but he has that name Kuntz on his truck. So I don't know what his job is, but, I just realized that, I mean, I always knew that it related, but it just reminded me that, yeah. And it's interesting too. I mean, I grew up with, you know, the Rays Royal thing is for real. Like, you know, I was here in sixth grade when they won the Super Bowl, the World Series at that time, and George Brett, and same kind of synergy with that team. And, you know, my dad was a baseball player and almost got, well, he did get drafted, I think, into the Phillies or the Pirates. I can't remember which one, but he chose to be in the military instead. But so I've always grown up with baseball too, but it's just so wild to me. I love meeting females, especially that know their shit about sports. I just think it's the coolest shit ever. I mean, and I love to see even women, you know, on TV that they're talking about, you know, the whatever, whichever sport it is. I'm like, there's my girl. Like, it's not just for men anymore. So when you're talking about all this, it's like super impressive. I love it so much.
Well, my dad always worked really hard, but he loved baseball. So he had five daughters, no sons on the farm. And so I played T-ball like a couple years, and then it just wasn't my thing. Like, I was pathetically shy as a child, and team sports weren't really my thing. And I wasn't super athletic, and I was kind of ungraceful, and it just wasn't my thing. So, but dad, after dinner in the evenings when he'd come in from working, we'd go out and we'd play. We'd have batting and fielding practice. We would play catch. You know, we would just have a good time. And then when he was in the fields in the summer, when the games were on, we were expected to watch. Mm-hmm. And then give him the highlights.
I love it.
You know, we didn't have internet then. You couldn't just pull up and look at the highlights. So we would tell him what all happened in the game.
That's awesome.
And years later, when I was running the bunkhouse a couple of owners ago, we had a bunch of guys who worked at the power plant that would get off work at 11. when they were on that shift, and they'd come in and get a few beers and play some pool on their way home. And they loved that I would do the highlights for them for the game, even though they could pull it up online or whatever. And I'm like, they were like, how did you learn how to do this? And I'm like, we did this for my dad when I was a kid, because he'd be out working. And so we would highlight the game for him. And they were just like, man, that's so cool. You know, kind of the same thing like you said, where they're just like, that's so cool.
It is, because, I mean, people don't take it seriously. But, I mean, I think it's almost better to hear it from a woman's perspective, because it's more detailed and it's more exciting, you know, kind of like, I don't know that it's Mitch Holthus that does it on for the Chiefs, but I know that when there's a touchdown, you know, the excitement there. I feel like women yes. have that same power with that. So that is awesome.
Yes. Well, and like, even through Twitter, there's like the Twitter's royal family, and I got to know people like Chris Kamler, who wrote a book about the Royals and writes for the Landmark newspaper. And that's how I got to know Ivan Foley, that owns the Landmark newspapers, because he's a big Royals fan. And I got to online meet the stadium in-stadium announcer, Mike McCartney. And
so cool.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, these connections you make. And then last week I had a surprise delivery here at home.
Yes, tell us about that.
And this is, again, when you live in a small town and you have lifelong friendships, and like, it's funny how some, like now I'm like third generation friends with some families, you know, it's so weird how that happens. And so my elementary school PE coach and I are friends, like in real life. now that I'm an adult, we are friends.
That's awesome.
And she is awesome. And like, she always sends me the coolest, like, Scully stuff too, because she knows I'm into skulls. And she has a son-in-law that was a kid I went to school with from kindergarten through 12th grade. And we weren't super close, but we were friends, mm-hmm. you know, like we sat together in Algebra 2 and we sat, you know, stuff like that. And so we have a good friendship. We weren't super close because he was more of the athlete and the whatever. We ran in some different circles. And, you know, I was the weirdo that was a goth before there was such a thing as goth and whatever.
Right.
And he now works in the front office for the Royals.
Oh, cool.
And so when he heard about this diagnosis, his mother-in-law, Susie, said, can you get Mary and Alex Gordon Ball? I really think we need to do this for her. And so Alex was happy to sign it. And that was before he'd even announced that he was retiring.
Wow.
And then Neil got this to Susie, and Susie brought this to me.
It's very cool. And I mean, the thing about you two is that at any moment, he would be lucky to meet you and have your energy around him. So I hope that that actually happens one day, because you deserve it. And I can just see you guys just sitting there shooting the shit. So let's make that happen also.
That's what I think. I think it would be nice if there's at some point post-COVID.
Yes.
That we could just, even for just a couple minutes, I'd just like to shake his hand once. Plus, I know breast cancer is near and dear to his heart. Mm-hmm. His mom had it. You know, he's done a lot of fundraising for breast cancer. And I just feel like it would be great to just be like, hey, thanks for your efforts. Thanks for being such a stand-up human and a great player. And that he's still going to work with these charities that he does in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it would be great.
I definitely feel like that's going to happen. And I feel like that's some universe shit too, as far as your connection that you feel with him, your love for him, that there's definitely something underlying there. So I hope that that does happen for sure.
Justin laughs because I think I've got like four Alex Gordon jerseys, like four different ones. And he's like, what, do you want to pull some of these other ones out that you have? I'm like, nope, I'll just wear an Alex Gordon.
So, and tell me a little bit about, you said Rude Girl. So tell me what that was all about.
Rude Girl is just a name for a girl. The Rude Boys and Rude Girls are supporters of ska music.
Okay.
and big fans. And back, you know, I was living out in, well, part as the third wave kind of started of ska, you know, which the original was back in the 60s, and then the 80s had like the two-tone years, the second wave. And then there was a big ska revival in the early 90s. And so my best friend from high school and I had this apartment that had this enormous living room in Lawrence. And we were going to the Bottleneck or to wherever, the Granada. And at the time, there was still a little bit of the whole reason I fell in love with Lawrence is there was this legendary punk club out there that I started going to when I was 15. Sorry, Mom. Sometimes I wasn't spending the night at friends. We were going to punk rock shows halfway across another state. And we got to see, it was like the only place in the Midwest other than like Chicago and whatever for punk bands to stop over. And so we got to go and see these bands, these punk bands. And we were into that growing up. Well, I also liked ska. And so we would go to the Bottleneck or the Granada. A lot of times when I was living down there, I was seeing live music at least five nights a week.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Good for the soul.
And oh, it is. And we had friends and sometimes we would help out. So we'd get in, we'd either know the band, one of the bands and get in on the guest list. So we weren't just running broke all the time, or we would do some help at the venue and get in free. Or if it was a show that was going to sell out, they'd usually just let us in anyway, cause they knew us. And so they would be able to do, I mean, we could afford to see this stuff. And, you know, like a pitcher of Miller High Life was $3.
Oh, nice.
And we would go to all these shows. Well, like one of the bands that was in, pretty big regionally for the third wave was the St. Louis ska band called MU330. And our apartment was so huge, they would come stay with us. They played there every 4 weeks and they would stay with us. And hold on 1 second. Hi, sorry, I'm doing a podcast. Can you give me about 10 minutes? Okay, just give me like 10 minutes. Sorry.
That's okay.
And unexpected visitor.
That's okay.
And we got thanked on their first CD.
Oh, that's awesome. Of course you did.
And we're big supporters of theirs forever. And I still, thanks to social media, get to keep in touch with some of those guys. And but we would go to all these shows and support the ska scene. And it's just always been a type of music I've really enjoyed. And, you know, it's upbeat. It's fun. We would dance. That's another thing I'm looking forward to be able to like maybe doing some skanking again.
Yeah.
And I think I'll have, with no breasts, I'll have an easier time swing dancing again too.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you kind of morph from punk rock to ska to rockabilly. Mm-hmm. And I still love them all.
Yes. So I've heard from another Facebook friend that you're an amazing dancer. So that's awesome. I mean, I feel like you're just like this jack of all trades. So so many people can learn things from you. And that's part of the reason I do this. It's just so dynamic. And it's just really shitty that you have to be going through such a hard time with this, even though you sound like you're kicking its ass day to day. And that's just fucking awesome.
It's good. I struggle some with the chemo. And I've had some side effects, but not as bad as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did find out Tuesday, after I'm done with the chemo, I'm going to have to do 6 weeks of radiation. Radiation is way different for breast cancer. It's very isolated and, it's the side effects of it are basically fatigue, which I already have, you know, like I told them, well, I haven't been well rested since 1998 anyway. So, and it'll feel like a sunburn.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where they're treating.
My mom had that same thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'm like, you know, it's a way to make sure that the cancer doesn't come back. And that's what my goal is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so How has it been since you shaved off all your hair? Do you feel liberated? How has that been making you feel?
Fantastic. For one, I use the tiniest shampoo on my scalp to keep it clean. And now I do get cold, but I have beanies.
Yes.
My good friend Lynn Searcy gifted me some beanies that are fantastic that they had used for her mom when she had cancer. And she said, and her mother-in-law too. And so she was like, these are so fantastic. And she'd ordered me some. I had my first treatment, and 2 weeks later I went, I guess I'm going to maybe not lose my hair yet. And the next day, over half my hair fell out in one day.
Oh, wow.
So I called my girl, Haley, who had been going to hairdresser school when COVID hit and got shut down, but she had her clippers and she came over and shaved. And I never knew for one how I've always suspected I have a fantastic skull.
You do. I mean, it makes sense. You love skulls, but yes.
But now I know.
You do. And I mean, you have the most beautiful hair. Your smile, I mean, you're just lit up, but even being bald, you're still that. So that's pretty unfair to most of us because I could not rock that. I would definitely have to be wearing a hat at all times. I've got like,
well, alien head. I told Justin, I go, people know me for three things. My hair, which is gone now. Mm-hmm. My boobs, which are gone now. And my smile, which is under a mask now. And I go, all I have left is my shitty personality. And he goes, but babe, I love your shitty personality.
Well, your personality has never been shitty. But yes, I love all of your, you know, your attitude towards everything is just one of the main reasons that I connect with you so much. You're just a big, bright, shining light in everyone's world. And we're just so grateful that you're kicking its ass. All of this that's been thrown at you. So,
I feel the same way about you because you are so open about your experiences and it helps other people understand if they've been in those situations, how you can get past it, how you can cope with it, how to help other people dealing with it.
Yes.
And that you, and you'll tell the good, bad, the ugly. Like you said, you were like, well, then I got this DWI. Is anybody happy or proud that they got a DWI?
Right, no. Absolutely. And one of the things that was the biggest learning experience.
But if we talk about
exactly.
It.
And I feel like, too, the more that you talk about it, it is always a lesson for other people. Be like, holy shit, I'm not alone. And that was one of the main reasons, too, I wanted to get on here for October. Not only for domestic violence awareness, but for also breast cancer awareness that, you know, it's always people that you just don't expect. And this has really rocked a ton of us that it's you. And so for me, you know,
me too.
The fact though, that you have always been so open too, and you are very open about your treatments and how you're feeling. And, I just think that's very important too, because so many people are, you know, they struggle. They're not like that. Or maybe they feel shamed or guilted or whatever their emotion may be. So you're vulnerable.
Well, or just hopeless.
Hopeless. Yes, absolutely. Your vulnerability and
there is
sharing all of that is definitely important. So we appreciate that for sure.
Well, and I want people to know too. I want women to know and men too, because yes. 3% of breast cancer cases are men. So if you find something, go get it checked out. I am terrible at doing my monthly exams. I maybe do two a year. Mm-hmm. It was dumb luck that I happened across this mass. And I was also very lucky that it was near the surface and easier to find. I had my mammogram last October, showed nothing. The cancer wasn't there. If it was growing at that half centimeter a month, you know, it had only been there since like January or February is when it started growing. So, I just think it's important for women to try to remember to do your breast exams, make sure at the very least that you're going once a year, getting your mammogram. If you cannot afford a mammogram, Jesus, call me and I will pay for it.
Yes.
You know, it's that important to get it done. And it sucks that not everybody has insurance and things like that.
Even without insurance, and I know $100 seems like a lot of money, but I mean, we spend that a lot at Target or out to eat or whatever. And I don't have insurance. I think it's bogus. And I pay maybe $110, if that, for one.
Yeah.
And to me, it's well spent. It's well spent.
Well, and if somebody though just can't afford it, geez, reach
Absolutely.
Out. If I can't find you a free one, I would pay
yes.
for it, you know, to someone, because it's that important to do. But also just be more in touch with your body. I have had every doctor I've talked to say, it's amazing how in touch you are with your body. Mm-hmm. And how, if you feel something, you immediately take action. Mm-hmm. And I just think as women, we get busy, especially if you have children and a job and other obligations, your time is precious. And we tend to put ourselves on the back burner, and we need to put ourselves right at the front, because otherwise, how are you going to take care of your kids and your job and your parents and your husband or wife or whatever? How are you going to take care of others if you are not taking care of
Absolutely.
Yourself?
Absolutely. And I think you made a huge point earlier that, you know, you really just didn't want to make people feel bad. You didn't want to make people upset. And I think that's something too, that I'm so glad that you're sharing this with everyone, because I feel like the more that people are there to support you, the healthier you're going to be. You know, the more isolated people
Right.
become in these diagnoses, I feel like they struggle more because they don't have that support. So you sharing it with us all and the day-to-day struggles. And I think it's interesting that you went in on a Thursday and now your treatments are on Thursday. Is that coincidental?
It is interesting.
Yeah. It's universe shit for sure.
Yes.
So, well, I just so appreciate your time. I just fucking adore you. I love you. I'm sending you so many.
I love you. I can't wait till we can get together.
I know
together.
It's going to be epic. I know 2021, everybody that's talking shit on it, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. We really have to keep putting that out in the universe, because we deserve it. We fucking deserve it. So yes.
We do.
Well, it's so good to talk to you. Take good care of yourself. Go hang out with your friend.
I will.
And I look forward to running into you or setting something on the calendar so that we can shoot the shit more and have a cheers.
Yes. And I should finish my radiation by mid-February, and then I'll still feel kind of crappy for a mm-hmm. few weeks. So I keep telling people, I'm like, we need to get COVID
licked. Yes.
Not literally, don't lick anything right now. It's bad. But wear your masks, wash your hands, socially distance, because I need a St. Patrick's Day this
yes,
year.
And you deserve it. You deserve Alex Gordon. You deserve your man to be with you. And you definitely deserve St. Patrick's Day. So we're going to make it happen
yes.
for you. Yes.
Yes.
Do it for Mary.
Do it. And also, I guess if I have one more thing to add, it's punch every Nazi.
Yeah, I forgot about that part. Definitely do that.
We may have to have a whole white supremacist conversation
yes,
someday.
Yes, we have so much more to talk about, but yes.
We do.
But I just appreciate your time. I love you. Take good care of yourself. And
thank you so much for inviting
yes,
me.
Yes, we will be in touch, lady. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for joining me on another episode of Friday Night Light. You can find us here every Thursday at midnight on anchor.fm or anywhere that you find your podcasts.